And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
You know, I think your brain produces a chemical that blocks out my voice.
What?
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Santa Barbara and Ventura Counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is the business of life. My first guest has won 7 lottery grand prizes for over $1 million. He taught us his lottery system of how to play and win big from his book, Learn How to Increase Your Chances of Winning the Lottery. My next guest had a revelation after he was mugged, strangely enough. He discovered that business and corporations are the dominant fact of contemporary life. We're going to discuss what's so terrible about life becoming more businesslike from his latest book, Life Incorporated. If you want to join in the conversation, you can always call us at 639-0008, or if you're outside of the area code, it's area code 805-639-0008. Douglas Rushkoth is an author, a teacher, a documentarian who focuses on the way people's cultures and institutions create, share, and influence each other's values. He's taught media studies at NYU and the New School University. He serves as a technology columnist for the Daily Beast, and he lectures around the world. Douglas's second-to-last book is titled Life Incorporated. He has 10 bestsellers on new media and popular culture, and they've been translated into over 30 different languages. He has written and hosted 3 award-winning frontline documentaries, and Douglas's commentaries have aired on CBS Sunday Morning, NPR All Things Considered, and they've appeared in publications such as the New York Times and Time Magazine. Douglas is a PhD candidate at Albrecht University's New Media Program. He graduated magna cum laude from Princeton University. He received an MFA in directing from California Institute of the Arts. He has a postgraduate fellowship, MFA, from the American Film Institute and a director's grant from the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences. Quite a resume. Welcome to the show, Douglas. How are you today?
Hey, good to be with you.
Well, it's great to have you as a guest. As I told you off the air, I have been looking forward to this interview for some time when I first pick up your book. And I just want to start out by saying you're a massive contradictions, aren't you? I mean, your book, Life Incorporated, rails against corporatism, which we'll talk about here in just a few minutes. But you're a keyboardist for a band whose name is the Industrial Band. It's an industrial band. Go figure. I mean, it's just, to me, that's a scratcher. But anyway, you write that corporatism in the United States is a bad thing. And so I want to start with, why is it wrong that our society is becoming more businesslike?
Well, it would be great if it were becoming more businesslike, in that it would be promoting commerce and people creating value and exchanging and transacting. But corporatism wasn't really invented to do that. Corporatism, just like central currency, was invented in the 1300s because people were getting rich. Because the middle class, what they started to call the bourgeois, was starting to make money by trading and being in business, being industrial with one another. The problem with that is the people who had been rich for the 1,000 years before that, the lords and kings that had basically been rich and gotten to stay rich simply by being rich and powerful, they were getting relatively less rich compared to all these people and all this great economic activity. So they had to find ways to shut it down, to monopolize business. So they invented the corporation, or what was then called the chartered monopoly, which literally meant only one company is allowed to do business in a certain industry. And if you like working in that industry, you've got to go get a job for that company instead of being in business for yourself. The other thing they came up with was centralized currency, which seems like a great idea, but when they issued centralized currency, they made all the other kinds of currencies. So if you were using a local currency or trading directly with someone else, that was punishable by death. So what you ended up with was a banking system that just watched implode on itself, which is basically a system for wealthy people to make money by lending it to everybody else. There's only one kind of money. You've got to borrow it from one central bank that has it.
All right. Now, there's a lot of information in what you just said, Douglas, so I want to take it slowly piece by piece, and let's take a look at it from the beginning, or the establishment of charter companies, as you said, that are granted to the monarch's favorite people. Well, you know, I agree with your basic premise, and that is that the monarchs were getting poor, and they needed a way to raise money, so they came up with these charter corporations. That's great. But really, in reality, governments have been getting poor all the time. And this was just another way of raising money, very similar to taxes. So this was just a clever, some monarch somewhere came up with a great idea to gain some more money. In the long run, it was just another taxation scheme and nothing more than that, right? It's no different than taxes.
Right.
All right,
so taxation scheme, right. So what it was this sort of kind of gross marriage between, you know, government and business, which is what, you know, what we call corporatism, where government and business are basically the same thing.
All right. Well, government and business merging, I don't think happened until later, but I'll get to that point in just a minute. The point that I want to make is when you come up with a centralized government issuing money, as centralized governments do, of course, that gives the government the power to print the money, and that gives it control over things like inflation and ultimately interest rates. But I'm going to challenge you on your whole thing about lending, government lending. Government lending isn't where lending started. Lending started with the Catholic Church, and it started with the Knights Templar. They set up the first banking system. So it really had nothing to do with a government per se. It had to do with the church and the organization.
That's, you know, Philip the Fair, who was the guy in France, really the king, really implemented centralized currency in France and made all these others illegal. He got the Knights Templar to defend him. I mean, that was the whole point. They were the ones who were promoting central currencies. While there were sort of empire-wide currencies that existed even in Roman times, they coexisted with local currencies through which people could actually get their daily business done. So you have these sort of big currencies that were great for long-distance trade. If, you know, you're going to trade with someone in Venice or something, it was perfect because it was gold and it retained its value over time. These are great currencies, but if you're just in a little town growing wheat and wanting to buy chickens, you know, it's not, you know, you don't really need to be borrowing money from the central bank to do that. It was all this local, this kind of decentralized business, the local agriculture, the kind of business that people like Adam Smith wrote about, that they thought would be the main form of business in America. You know, that was the stuff that was really repressed by this way of operating. And then, you know, flash forward to today, it's the same kinds of reasons why a Walmart can be so much more successful in a town than a local chemist, and why we end up really having to go to the one who has cheaper prices, even if they don't really contribute to the community in the same way.
All right. Well, we'll come back and talk about that as well. We're talking to Douglas Rushkoff, everybody. His book, Life Incorporated, How the World Became a Corporation and How to Take It Back. I just want to finish up on the whole idea of money, because here in the United States, it wasn't all that long ago that we had two different forms of money. Of course, everybody remembers during the Civil War, we had Confederate dollars, U.S. dollars. In fact, states were issuing money right up until the Civil War, when the federal government exerted more power over the states than states' governments did. But even in the 1930s, we had gold and silver certificates versus just regular paper currency. And so there were two types of currencies floating around. It hasn't been all that long that the government has focused in on the $1 in God we trust, and that really only happened after President Nixon took us off the gold standard. So, you know, I'm just trying to get some historical perspective, get my arms around this, Douglas, to say I'm not sure that it has impeded our ability to grow companies and everything else. Apple Computer grew up in the 1970s, immediately after we went off the gold standard. Now, it's become a corporate behemoth, but at the time, it was a garage company. 1949, Hewlett-Packard started in a garage. It has become a corporate behemoth, but it started in a garage. I'm not sure that corporatization has stopped new businesses from growing and fermenting on the local level. So I'd like to have you explain how it's really impeding entrepreneurialism and small startups.
Well, I mean, there's two answers to that question. First, I mean, yeah, going off the gold standard was a bit like shooting steroids into the economy. You know, it's one less, oh, here's something else we can do. let's try this. You know, but what we're calling money becomes more and more abstract every time we do it.
Sure.
And eventually, I think you hit a wall. So we'll see if we can pull another one out of the hat somehow. You know, some other sort of derivative on money that everyone starts to value again, and we can capitalize ourselves back into a paradise. No, there are certainly there's businesses that can grow, particularly when, I mean, in this case, we had a bunch of businesses that were using a government funded research to develop silicon chips and all that, a huge amount of investment. It was great. That's what got us the computer revolution. But if you look at something, say, like, look at the toy industry. You know, a few years ago, some toys, you know, that had red paint on them that were outsourced to China came to the U.S., little Dora toys and stuff from Mattel and Hasbro, that had lead in the paint.
Right.
So everyone goes up in arms, oh, my God, there's lead in the paint because it was outsourced to China and all this. So the government calls in the big toy manufacturers, and they come up with a new set of regulations to make sure something like this never happens again. And what happens when you've got these kinds of companies working with government to make regulations is they come up with regulations that favor them. So what they did was figured out, let's just do a testing thing where all toys that are going to be sold to American children have to be put through, you know, $50,000 of testing. We have to donate like 1,000 units to be burned and eaten and to be tested in this fashion. And they all agree, and government agrees, and it comes out, oh, this is going to be great for everybody. Now all your toys will be tested. What about all the people who are just making 100 or 200 toys a year in a, you know, in a tiny factory in their garage? You know, how do they compete in that? How can they even get through that regulatory process?
Well, you make a compelling case for smaller, fewer regulations. I would agree with you on that 100%. We need fewer regulations. That's a ridiculous regulation that happened. But I want to come back and challenge you, Douglas, because I think that federal governments are going to become irrelevant in the next 10 years. And let's look at it this way. You talked about outsourcing to China, and then the government got together with the corporations to create these new regulations about testing the toys. I would argue that in China, Microsoft has more power and can exert more power on the government than the U.S. can. And here's why. Microsoft's got a research center there that employs 800 to 900 very educated, very well-paid Chinese people. And so when Microsoft sneezes, the Chinese government sits up and takes notice and offers them a Kleenex. Whereas we send over Gates to talk to them about, you know, their relationship with Taiwan or human rights or something of that level, and they just kind of blow us off because they know that they are funding all of our national debt. They're the ones that are buying all of our bonds. So in many ways, Microsoft, a corporation, has more power than does the U.S. government. Your comments?
Right, and not just in China, but in the United States as well. You know, the Pentagon has gone to Congress and begged them to let them use Linux software instead of Microsoft software because the government, the Pentagon, wants to be able to develop its own security codes to keep their computers more safe than just off-the-shelf Microsoft products. But because they're using Microsoft operating system, they're not allowed to go in there and edit it and change it because the source code is closed. It's not open to their editing. So they've got Congress and we use Linux. But Microsoft has lobbied Congress that the Pentagon's not allowed to use anybody else's software except Microsoft. So now you've got 900 or however many it is, Chinese laborers and intelligent people making the software that the Pentagon has to use and isn't even allowed to open up and find out how the security works. You're absolutely right.
Oh, my goodness. We're talking to Douglas Rushkoff, everybody. Life Incorporated, his book, How the World Became a Corporation and How to Take It Back. We're running out of time. There's so much ground to cover, Douglas. One of the things that I want you to do for my listeners is differentiate for them between corporatism, which is the thesis of your book, and consumerism. As I read your book, of course, I read your book post-crash, but as I read your book, I was saying, well, really, yours is a book that's railing against consumerism more than it is corporatism. So differentiate between those two for me, please.
Well, I would say consumerism is kind of the way individual human beings internalize corporate values. You know, we are not corporations, so we don't look at the bottom line the same way that they do. But we have kind of a different bottom line, a different set of calculations. Consumers are really the consumer identity. You know, if we think of ourselves as consumers, then we're the perfectly matched humans for a world that's run by corporations. You know, so then you're a worker when you're at work, you're a consumer when you're at home, and, you know, you're like a citizen and a parent and a friend and those kind of things. With very, very little of your time. You kind of switch from one to the other. But if you look at the world in terms of what can you buy to fix this problem, what can you buy to fix that problem, then I think you end up with a very limited range of solutions. You know, you don't think of things in terms of, what could I borrow that would help me get through this problem? What friend do I have who could help me deal with this, rather than who could I hire to help me deal with this? And the more we want to answer every solution in our lives with money, I feel like the less personal human contact we have with each other, the less sense of community we have. And I think the less fun we really have. You know, money is great for solving certain kinds of things. And I want to buy my iPhone, and I want to buy a corporate iPhone with corporate money that gets shipped thousands of miles. That's great. You know, but do I want my that way? Do I want my relationships that way? Do I want my kid taken care of that way? That's where it starts. Starts to break down a little bit.
All right, Douglas. Well, we're talking to Douglas Rushkoff, everybody. And as I said at the outset, Douglas, you are just a mass of contradictions in my mind, because here you are, you're talking about corporate America, but the irony to me is that you're playing the system yourself to have your book published. Your book, Life Incorporated, was published by Bertelsmann, one of the world's largest corporations, through its
Absolutely.
Random House imprint. And, you know,
I wrote about that in the book.
Your ideas couldn't have come.
It's not a contradiction. It's that we're not orthodox. We're not, you know, fascists here. You don't have to, you know, exterminate the world of one kind of thing because it's become overgrown. It's just like, you know, the fungus and the bacteria in your body are kind of balanced. What I'm saying is, no, we don't end the corporations. We use corporations for what corporations are good for. You want to distribute a book around the world? Corporations really good for that. You want to buy an iPhone or a computer? Corporations really good for that. You want to get charred on the Swiss chard on your plate? Well, corporations aren't really so good for that. A local farmer's a little bit better for that. You want to have a decent school in your town? Well, maybe a giant national system isn't as good for that as something a little smaller. So it's a matter of balancing, choosing corporations. They're in the right tool for the right job.
All right. And we're going to have to leave it there, Douglas. But I will say this. We do agree on one thing, and that is that this is a critical moment in human history. We're seeing a change from one type of economic system to another. Not sure exactly how that's going to go, but it's the same sort of transition that we went through when we went from feudal to mercantile, from agrarian to industrial, industrial to the knowledge worker, and I think we're going to see that. We'll have to have you back on the show to talk about that in the future. We've been talking to Douglas Rushkoff, for everybody. His book, Life Incorporated, How the World Became a Corporation, How to Take It Back. Douglas, if people want to learn more about you, learn more about your ideas, where would you direct them to go on the internet?
Just go to rushkoff.com, R-U-S-H-K-O-F-F.
Rushkoff.com. That is great. Douglas, thank you so much for being my guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.